Hi, everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable, episode 139. This is our first recap of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. We're going to be going over season one, episodes one, Welcome to the Hellmouth, and The Harvest, which is episode two, but also kind of a two-parter for this pilot. As always, you can contact us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Twitter is re_watchable. This post on hypable.com or on Tumblr at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. I'm Karen, and I will be your host today, and I'm joined by Ariana, Kristen, and Natalie. Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Okay, so this is very exciting, but before we get to it, we're going to do our fun facts. And if you are newly joining us, just remember that we do fun facts. You can kind of recognize our voices and everything. So I'm going to go first, even though mine's not exciting, but everyone thinks it is. I'm excited about it. I'm Karen, and I'm going home for Christmas, which is very exciting to me because I recently moved to North Carolina from New York. And I miss my mom and dad, and it's going to be nice. Maybe we'll actually have snow, because there's no snow in North Carolina, which is normally fine, but I do like snow on Christmas.
That is exciting, Karen.
Thanks. Do you want to go next?
Yeah, well, okay, I'm going to have two then. So tying into yours, I'm actually home for Christmas right now, which means, you guys, I get to record in my car again. So, Veronica Mars tradition coming back.
Okay, what? This is kind of hilarious because I didn't know you ever stopped recording in your car. Like,
oh, really?
You record in your car.
You don't? No, when I'm in my apartment, I record in my apartment but when I'm at home, there's too many people. So, I record in my car.
Okay, I've envisioned you in your car this whole time.
Ariana, you didn't say your name for the nice people.
Oh, my goodness. My name is Ariana. My other fun fact. Oh, well, I wanted to ask everybody since I want to keep it a little bit Star Wars themed today, who's your favorite Star Wars character? Mine is Leia, to no one's surprise. Go read my article on Leia that I wrote this week. Next.
I really like Rey. I think she's awesome. I want to be her.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going, like, classic Star Wars, I was a huge R2-D2 fan. Like, I wanted one of my own. And if you're not going classic, I really, really, really loved Finn, and I would love to just give him a hug. Like, he's such a sweetheart, and I'm excited to see that movie again when I see my brother in a couple weeks, so yeah.
Is this my actual fun fact? Because, again, once again, we have lost track of the naming business, but... I'm Natalie, and my fun fact is that before last week, I had never seen all of Star Wars in full, and I undertook the project of doing that in order to, number one, be prepared to see the new Star... did I say Star Trek or Star Wars just then? Have I got Star Trek on the
you
brain?
You were going to say Star Trek, but then you stopped yourself. You're okay.
Yeah. If I've mixed that up, it's because I am aware of what J.J. Abrams is capable of doing to my brain because I was not in any way in the Star Trek fandom in 2009, and I ended up seeing his reboot of Star Trek 11 times in the cinema. Nine or 11 times in the cinema, which is more than I've seen any other movie. It was at least 9. It may have been more. And so I kind of suspected that something similar was going to happen with the new Star Wars movie. So I pre-prepared, and in my preparation, I wrote an article about what it was like to watch all 6 Star Wars movies through the lens of kind of someone in 2015 in fandom who's never seen them before.
Your article was so fascinating, Natalie. I had, like, all of my friends read it.
Really?
And they were like, oh, this is fascinating. Yes.
Really?
Yes, because... it's interesting to see the things that bothered you that, like, never bothered us watching it as, like, kids. And you're like, you know what? Like, Han is kind of a douche, but, like, I still love him. He's still my bae. But, like...
yeah. I mean, okay, the thing about Han...
I just interrupt for 2 seconds and say that statement, Ariana, is very appropriate to Buffy. So continue.
Yeah, that's true. the thing about Han is, you know, he does come through in the end, but I think that what's problematic about him is that all of these disgusting nerd baby men have attached themselves to, like, the before version of him and think that that's, like, the good thing to aim for. And I'm like, did you miss the part where he went through a Jane Eyre, Mr. Rochester situation and came out the other side, like, deserving of the girl? Because that's what happened, and you seem to have missed that. But anyway...
And you're so right, she didn't want him before. She didn't
want it that. Wasn't like that worked on her. It wasn't like his behavior, like, wore her down or anything. But anyway, my favorite Star Wars character in the originals is Luke. And I am so glad that he's lovely, because I've been under the misapprehension my whole life that he was, like, lame and annoying, and he's not. I adore him. And my favorite Star Wars character of all time, based on the new movie, is Poe Dameron, who was a big part of the reason I wanted to see the movie, because Oscar Isaac is hilarious. But, oh my God, I have so many thoughts and feelings about that character that I need to go and see the movie again immediately, and I need number 8 to come out next week so I can continue this fascination. So that's me, a new Star Wars fan, very into it, etc.
And I'm Kristen, and my fun fact will be that I'm pretty sure I accidentally started a Disney Princess coffee mug collection. Karen brought me one home when she went to Disney World, and then I bought one because it was on sale when I ordered a bunch of Christmas presents. And so I have a Jasmine mug and a Belle mug, and now I think I need to just have them all.
Oh my gosh, do you have the Belle mug that says, oh, mornings are such a beast?
Yes.
Yes! Me too! Me too!
Karen bought it for me, and it's awesome.
Yeah. They need to come out with Hercules mugs. Okay, I'm done.
There's never going to be Hercules
shut
anything.
Shut up, Natalie. You don't know that.
Leo did have a baby Pegasus toy as a child. Like, when the movie came out, there was merch surrounding it, but after it came out, they've never replicated the merch, if you know what I mean.
To this day, my family still eats on Hercules plates, because that's what we bought at Burger King when they came out. That's amazing. What we eat on a daily basis.
That's so awesome.
Like plastic ones, or are
yeah,
they?
Yeah, plastic ones.
China? Like
no, they're not China.
I don't know.
Now I need some China Hercules dishes. Okay. Yes, let's get into this synopsis that I have not read ahead of time, before things get even more derailed. So. Episode 1, Welcome to Hellmouth. Episode 2, The Harvest. We're squishing the synopses together into one big one. A long time ago, in a Whedonverse far, far away, it is a period of teen angst in the upcoming apocalypse. Lunatic vampires striking from the sewers have won their first victory in their attempts to complete the harvest. Only one nonchalant white girl known as the Slayer stands between them and the destruction of humankind. During the battle, the Slayer and her allies find themselves with an unprecedented setback as her mother begins to feel apprehensive about the way her daughter's recently been wearing less and going out more. The vampires, meanwhile, continue to perpetuate rape culture at janky clubs frequented by pedophiles. Pursued by the Slayer once she is free from her parental bonds, the vampires fight for their lives amidst a flock of horny yet unobservant teens. The Slayer vanquishes her enemies with weapons found inside your local abuelita's sock drawer, but the fight to defeat the dark side is only just beginning, and the Slayer is our only hope. That's actually quite accurate. Like, that's a pretty good summary.
I love the subtle Star Wars references. Nicely done.
All right, so first question of the day, obviously, is what the newbies thought of these first two episodes. So, Adriana, why don't you go first?
I mean, I fell asleep while watching it, which should maybe be an indicator. I'm so sorry. I don't want to turn into the Britney of this podcast.
How did you make it through 7 seasons? So I don't understand.
I don't know. I mean, I'm hoping it gets better. I'm holding on. I have a new hope.
Did you like anything about it?
I really liked Buffy's hair. I thought it was really nice hair.
Good. This show is going to have more hair bending than Avatar.
All right. And Kristen, what did you think?
I like it. I am very well indoctrinated into like the campy 90s TV. Like, yeah. I'm very used to it. So it didn't really catch me off guard that this doesn't seem to take itself seriously, but it also kind of does at the same time. Like, I'm used to that. So let's just say we started rewatching this, I also like myself started rewatching Smallville, and I'm like, oh, I remember all of these days, like when special effects were not spectacular and, you know, you just kind of did the best you could. And so, yeah, it kind of brought back all the love. So yeah, I like it so far.
It's so different than Smallville, Kristen, because like you said, Smallville is like campy and cheesy, but it doesn't know it's campy and cheesy. So it has heart because of that. It's like, no, we are trying to make the best show possible. We don't know we're weird or like cheesy.
I have but, like, some this thoughts is, like, about that.
Winking which... at the audience, like, oh, aren't we so funny? Ha ha. She doesn't care that there's vampires. Ha ha. That bugs me.
I will say there is a character or two that I know everyone loves that right now I'm kind of like, I don't know. Like, I find them a little boring. Giles. but I'm hoping that prepared. Changes. He has a very soothing voice, and I almost like passed out during his like lengthy speeches. So I'm not saying that it's boring, but I'm saying that Giles needs to like step up a little bit in my head.
Natalie, there was so much I wanted to say to her when she revealed that. And in the most like unspoilerly way, I was just like, just wait. He's very complicated.
Giles has don't worry, he'll bit. Sacrifice himself for everybody at some point, Kristen, and then you're gonna feel terrible about yourself.
Okay. You know. I'm not saying that that won't be a thematic part of Buffy, but I won't confirm or deny, that that happens with that character.
I think the best part about all of this is going to be listening to Natalie try not to say anything.
Oh!
Like, you totally are like,
Mitch.
But no.
I'm going to be the Mitch.
You could never be the Mitch, Natalie.
All right, yeah. Without spoiling anything, the interest in Giles is not necessarily even... It's not like, oh, he'll grow into something. He has one of the best backgrounds as well. Like, he is, trust me, just wait. This is nothing, this is like tip of the iceberg. He's amazing, you're not prepared. But, yeah.
I'm hoping he gets a little better. So, yeah.
Just wait. Now, Natalie, it had been a while since you last watched, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so what did you think upon rewatch of these two episodes?
I had really different opinions of, like, the introduction of a lot of the characters, actually. And, like, it was like, you know, some of the parts hit me a bit harder. Like, one of the moments, actually, speaking of Giles, his first meeting with Buffy, I was, like, having a lot of emotions about, purely because I know not even necessarily what's to come. This isn't majorly spoilery. This isn't going to be like a big reveal of stuff from a past, but it's kind of just canon in the universe that, like, Giles as a watcher, you'll learn more about what a watcher is, but as a watcher, he's never had a slayer to look after, but he's basically been trained to have one his whole life, and he's been waiting for her, you know, forever, basically, like, or for as long as he's been a watcher, he has it, like, and so it's like a massive moment for him to meet her, and his face when it happens was really cute to me. But a couple of characters...
How many Watchers is there? Is he the only one? I mean, there's only one Slayer, so...
You're going to learn a lot more about that. And if the show doesn't make it clear enough, we can explain it further at the time. But the idea of there being only one Slayer, you'll learn a lot more about how that works later on.
Intrigue.
But there are multiple Watchers. For canonically as well, this is canon from the movie, not spoiler canon from the rest of the show. Buffy had a former Watcher in LA in her old life. He died, basically. So that's movie canon from the prequel movie.
Which is a good thing to say, because the movie doesn't play a huge part on the series. They definitely, like, take things from it. At least, okay, so confession, I've never seen the movie. I don't feel...
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. I don't feel that it's necessary to enjoy the series because Joss Whedon has stated in the past that the movie basically doesn't exist in the world of Buffy the TV series. But there are some things that, like, are incorporated in her story that come from the movie, so like the same place where she went to high school and how there was a fire in the high school gym and stuff like yeah. that, but the movie pretty much doesn't exist at this point.
Yeah, at the end of the movie she has to burn down the gym because it's got all these vampires in it and, you know, whatever, and then she gets expelled and stuff like that. So yeah, she basically, the reason that she's in Sunnydale is, you know, she was acting as the Slayer in LA and bad stuff happened and she gave it up, and that's canonical from the movie coming into the show. One character, a couple of characters really stuck out to me as different on this rewatch. Biggest one was Angel. Karen, I think I'm gonna love him this time. Oh, number gosh. One, because I really like him in the show of Angel, but like I used to take him as like too broody and dark, and now because I think I've spent 5 years analyzing the behavior of Derek Hale, I'm just seeing Angel as like hilarious. Like I'm seeing him as like a big dork who's like trying to be really cool and yes! failing. You know what okay. I mean?
That's oh exactly God. What I thought with this guy. I was like, what is this guy's purpose? He's just like hiding in shadows, like, oh, I'm your friend. I'm a friend, not yours. Like, and then he's basically useless. He didn't do anything in these two episodes except like, oh, this is gonna be interesting. Like, I don't
yeah,
understand.
I appreciated Angel for what he was back then before, but now I'm just going to find him hysterical, which is like, I won't tell you much about Angel. You guys don't really know him yet, but you are aware that there is a spin-off called Angel, I assume.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. In Angel, he is a hilarious character. Like, I really love the character in the spin-off, but I never liked him much in Buffy because I didn't see much of him in that. But this time I may, because I don't know if it's ironic or not. I don't know if it, back then it was meant to be all dark and hilarious. But right, maybe it's just because I'm older and now I understand, like, how much that adults are really just a tall child holding a beer and not actually, like, a cool like, person. So now I'm just, like, viewing him in a much more like, oh, you're pathetic light, and I'm really enjoying it. So I'm actually quite happy about that. That's the biggest thing, Karen, that struck me was how differently I viewed Angel. And I'm kind of stoked
so,
on it. Actually.
So at least somewhere in my brain for the entire series, I'm going to be thinking of him as Derek, just so you know.
That's like, that's a good, yeah, that's just go with that and it'll like make things really good. For
like
you,
until we know more about Angel, like, I'm you know, pretty sure that's how I'm going to think about
like,
him.
You know, Derek in season one where he's all like brooding mm-hmm. around Scott and then it turns out he's like the world's biggest nerd. Yeah. Like that's what I'm getting from Angel now. So
that, yeah. I'm glad you made that comparison because rewatching these two episodes, it's also been a while since I've done a rewatch, and I really enjoyed them. I thought they were hilarious. I kept looking over at Kristen like, are you laughing? Because I find this really funny. And sometimes she would, sometimes she'd just kind of look at me like, oh, what's going on? I'm kind of afraid right now. But I thought it was great, and I really enjoyed watching them again. Two things that really stuck out to me. One was how creepy Giles is. Like, there are a couple of places, and don't get me wrong, I love Giles. I really do. I think he's fascinating, and I think he's a wonderful character. But there are some instances where he gets very close to Buffy and Willow in, like, these weird positions. And I think it had to do with, like, the framing and how they had to set up the shot mm-hmm. and stuff. But, like, he was just a little awkward.
Yeah, because they didn't have widescreen then. These are square.
Yeah.
He's still on square cut, like television, if you know what I mean. So you have to fit more into the shot.
Yeah, it just made it a little weird. But then, Angel, I was like, who is this Joker?
I cannot
take him seriously.
I know! It's so good! I'm so excited now,
well,
Karen!
I was not excited, because I was like, oh god, what if I hate Angel on this rewatch? Like, what's gonna happen? And But now that you're comparing him to Derek, I think I can kind of, like, categorize him in my mind as the same type of character.
He thinks he's really cool.
Yeah, but he's not.
He's trying to do the best he can. He thinks he knows it all. He knows shit all. He knows nothing. And he's trying to seem really cool and superior, and it's not working. So yeah. I'm in love with this, and I'm really happy about it.
Okay, so speaking of Angel and a lot of the other characters, Ariana, you said, why does everyone have terrible names?
Yes, okay. This girl's name is Buffy, and nobody calls her out on that. That's just really bizarre to me.
Excuse me! One of the best scenes in the episode is that girl being like, what kind of name is Buffy? And then someone else to her is like, hey, Aphrodisia. And I'm like, that's freaking comedy gold right there. Thank you very much. I don't know. Her name's Buffy, and you just have to go with it.
I love it. I think Willow is a really pretty name.
Well, Willow is a name that people have now, but in 1997, nobody had the name Willow. And, like, Xander, what is that? Cordelia? Like, is she from the 1700s? I mean, I'm going to get...
I am so a name collector, so I love that none of them have... like typical names. Like, I love Willow. Xander, I assume, is like a shortening of Alexander, mm-hmm. and then everyone just calls him Xander.
Why don't they call him Alex, like every other Alexander to ever exist?
Alex is boring.
Because everyone gets called Alex, so he wanted to be Xander. It's like,
that
Topher
seems like
Grace
super
going back
typical
Topher
for this.
I love the Topher Grace thing. I think that's ridiculous,
oh,
but awesome.
Oh my god, stop. His name is Christopher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No way.
Mind blown.
So, I mean, I'm totally cool with it because I love really fun, different names. It helps separate characters mm-hmm. in my brain because I read so much. So it makes me happy that I don't know another Cordelia in my brain. So it will forever be that chick.
Have you ever explained where he got the name Buffy from?
Well, it's from the movie, but I don't know how, like.
Well, yeah, it's from the movie. But I'm sure, I mean, he had to have made it up. It just seems so, like, Topanga is named after a highway sign.
I don't know how much control Joss had of the original movie. Oh, no, he wrote, he wrote the script. He didn't produce the movie. He may not have named her. He may not have come up with the original concept, if you know what I mean. Like, the people who produced it may have come up with the original concept. But yes, he was the screenwriter, of the movie. So, I don't know. Google, why is Buffy named Buffy?
I did, and nothing is on it. Nobody cares. I feel like this is really important, and nobody cares where this girl's weird name came from.
It's not important.
You just have to go with it.
Yeah, it makes it so much better if you just go with it. Which kind of leads into my next question, which is something else that you raised. Does this show take itself too seriously? And I think one of the most brilliant things about Buffy is that it knows it's a little ridiculous. It has those, and you've already seen them, so this isn't like a spoiler, but like Buffy tends to have those one-liners right before she kills somebody, and that does not go away. Sorry if that bothers you.
It really doesn't, you guys.
I love
it
so much, though.
The show gets freaking dark, but it doesn't go away.
That's the other thing, is like, yeah, it's kind of cheesy, it's kind of over the top, and yeah, they pause before they kill the bad guy to say something witty, but sometimes Buffy will get so dark and so deep that, like, it'll crush your soul. And I think that was very much the purpose of that, is to kind of, like, give you both sides of that coin and, like, take you really far up, but then take you really far down, too. And I think that balance is something that Buffy does really well that I think a lot of other shows have tried to do, but can't always balance the humor and the darkness of it at the same time.
I mean, I guess I'm used to dramas that, I don't know, it, maybe it's the Vampire Diaries that I've seen and stuff where you can't take that too seriously. Like, the characters on the show take it so seriously. Everything is life or death all the time. But when you're, like, talking about it to someone and you're like, oh yeah, well, her doppelganger is alive, so she needs the blood to raise the other guy. Like, you can't take it too seriously. So I feel I'm used to the ridiculous of it because I've watched so much in the vampire genre that it doesn't bother me that it's like that Joss has that balance between it's a drama, this is serious business, and these vampires are actually trying to kill everyone, and But we're still going to take a second and make the really ridiculous pun because it's there and I need to.
Okay, so, sorry. I was, like, not paying attention because I was researching where Buffy comes from. And it's a derivative of Elizabeth, which makes me feel a lot better now, so.
In the olden days, people had really weird nicknames for names that we don't use anymore. Like, back in, like, the 1700s, names turned into all sorts of things, if you know what I mean. So, yeah.
But I think, Kristen, you were talking about how this is, like, the Vampire Diaries because it's cheesy. But I disagree because I love the Vampire Diaries. Even though I've only watched season 6 and 7, I feel like it's not like that at all because, well, maybe it was in the early seasons because I tried watching the pilot and I was like, that's terrible. I'm not watching that for the Vampire Diaries.
Yeah, the pilot's awful. Don't worry about that.
Yeah. But, like, I feel like the Vampire Diaries, the characters take everything seriously. But you don't have to. It's like the creators are like, isn't this ridiculous? There's doppelgangers. But the characters are like, you know, this is important. We have to go right now. Our lives are in danger. But here, I'm like, Buffy, she's like fighting the vampires. And then she stops in the middle to like make a bad joke and then like keeps going. And I was like, but there's people dying. This
it's her
funny.
Coping mechanism.
Yeah, like, that's what I was going to say.
I think it's the exact opposite of the Vampire Diaries and what you're describing, in that we take it seriously, but the characters don't. It's not that they don't take it seriously. Number one, the newbies, like Willow and Xander, have only just gotten in on it, so they're like, what the hell? How can we possibly you kind of don't believe something is real. But Buffy herself, it's just her personality, and I think it's her coping mechanism for having to do this, basically. Like, it does get, as I said, it does get a lot darker. The high school years, especially the first year of high school, like, season one, it's only 12 episodes, and it's a lot cheesier. Like, every episode, like, it's kind of, like, you know, a little bit of a cheesy kind of Monster of the Week episode, and it really grows from that. But, you know, can't say too much more, but it does take itself, they do take the things seriously, you know, eventually. But I don't know, the one-liners, Karen, what do you think?
Oh, I love them. I think it's amazing. And, I mean, I like really terrible jokes, so that shouldn't be a surprise.
You do.
But I also do think that it's Buffy's coping mechanism, especially, like, as she goes on, some really terrible things happen to her, and what else is she gonna do? You know, she would be so depressed if she didn't find an outlet, and it just so happens that bad puns are her outlet. Just go with it, it's fine.
Yeah, there are,
I feel like it's different than like Veronica Mars would do that. She'd be like in the middle of a terrible situation and make a joke, but like her jokes are funny to me. I think it's like the delivery. I was noticing, like, I was trying to describe what these actors, I feel like they're not good actors, but it's not like wooden acting. Like, they do have a lot of expression and emotion, but I feel like their lines are not landing for me. And I finally figured out maybe it's because they're kind of, it seems almost like theater acting. They're like overacting everything. Like,
well, remember too that this is the pilot, so things are always going to be a little rough in the beginning, and even a lot of fans will also agree that season one, not its finest hour. So just give it a little bit of time. If you still feel that way in season two, then we can, you know, worry about it. But considering it's the pilot, I think that people are trying to kind of find where they are and where their characters are. And I agree, actually, that the dialogue seems really over the top sometimes. I happen to like that, but I think it's because I'm looking back on it and going, oh my God, isn't this ridiculous? I love it so much. One of the characters that you're introduced, I'm putting quotes around the word characters, is the Bronze. I love the Bronze.
Oh,
it comes back quite a bit. So, and I think there are some funny lines in that scene, and I thought it was really weird, again, you know, Giles being creepy, showing up at the club, and just the way that he
was
just,
yes.
I just was, Giles, what are you doing? You're just digging yourself a hole. But do you think the Bronze is, like, in high school, if I was Willow, and Willow is obviously a very, like, anxious kind of character, very nerdy, very shy, I would never go to a club in high school.
Alone? Ever. Would you go alone? Oh my gosh. She's crazy.
She was like, King Xander, but
Okay, meeting with, like, quotation marks.
I would have met him outside the club and we would have gone in together.
Or I would have made him pick me up and then go to the club. Like, no, I'm not showing up to this janky-ass club in the middle of nowhere by myself. No, thank you. But I thought it was funny that Cordelia's like, yeah, it's totally the scene. Like, it's the place to be. I mean, they let everybody in, but it's cool anyway. And I was like, in my head, yeah, you think it's cool because it's literally the only place that will let you in because you are a minor.
Yeah, I think that's it. It's just the only club that they can go to, so they've made it the scene, if you know what I mean.
And like, I was thinking it's probably not the scene at all. It's probably full of high schoolers and, like, totally lame, but...
Full of high schoolers and vampires. Yeah.
The bronze is interesting as well, because in the 90s or whenever this was airing, it was one of the showcases, like other shows have, which showcases like real bands. Like, so every few episodes there'd be like a real band doing a,
cool.
Like a showcase spot there. Like in, I don't know, they did that on the OC, One Tree Hill and stuff like that. So keep an eye on the bands that are playing when you go to the bronze, because it's often like real bands from that era, like especially of certain genres, doing like guest spots there. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah, I was going to ask, too, all of the references and things like that, the bands and stuff, because I watched it after the series initially aired, it tends to go over my head a little bit, which is why, Nat, when you introduced that website, was like, here are all the things, what they mean. I was like, yes, you are saving me. But how do you guys feel about the stuff that they're referencing? Is it landing for you or not?
What stuff?
Pop culture references, like anything that era, like, that they mention.
They thought Frappuccinos were trendy, which was amusing.
They were at the time.
Like, I'm trying to think of any of the specific references. And
like, I know at one point Buffy says, you look
like DeBarge. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but what is that? I guess I'll just look it up. DeBarge.
Look on the... website that I linked, the episode guide.
Oh, it's
website,
a sibling music website. Group. Oh my gosh. This is hilarious. From the 70s.
I mean, there wasn't anything that I remembered hearing that I was like, I don't understand that, I don't get the joke. But there probably were a few things. Like, I don't even remember hearing that line. So, you know, there's probably things I missed. But it's kind of like when I watched Gilmore Girls, I didn't always get all the references because nobody got all the references on the first watch. So there's still things that I find myself like learning now. Like I see it again and I'm like, oh, so I guess I don't worry so much if I miss one or two.
Yeah. Okay. Back on track though, because I want to talk about vampires. What a novel idea on a vampire show. The Slayer lore and the Watcher lore. You guys intrigued by that, newbies?
Well, yeah, because I'm assuming it's quite important.
Just a little
since
bit.
He said the word Watcher like it had a capital letter.
Capital
like,
W.
Giles, yeah, when he started talking about it, it was a proper term, and she was the Slayer, so I assumed that it would be of great importance later.
I wonder if he's an angel, because in Watcher, Watcher terms, like, canonically, in like, the real world, is like a term for fallen angels. Turn to the dark side.
Hmm.
I'm just kidding. I'm sure he's not. I'm sure he's a human.
Like, nope. You don't need to know any of this.
One of my favorite things about the Slayer lore is that nothing necessarily changes over the course of the series, but you keep learning about it, and the little things that are added here and there are really fascinating. And it's quite a simple idea. You know, there's one girl to fight all the vampires, which sucks to be her, clearly. Mm-hmm. But, and you know, he has a watcher who watches her. And it's fairly straightforward. Like, there's a cute little rhyme and a little prophecy thing to go with it. But all in all, it's a very easy concept to understand right from the pilot, which isn't always the case in supernatural shows. Sometimes things get very convoluted and you kind of have to wrap your head around how the world works. But I think one of the perks of Buffy is that it's fairly simple.
I'm interested to find out why there's only one, because that seems like very not convenient that she has the responsibility of killing all of the vampires, but there's only one of her.
Especially, like, in
You're
the
not
world.
Wrong.
Like, mm-hmm. if it was, like, one per territory or something, like, in the entire world, it seems like that's a lot of work.
Or, like, if it was, like, a family thing, like, she could, yeah. you know, reproduce and make more Slayer babies.
These are very good things to have issues with, just saying.
Yes. Okay.
Keep thinking this way and keep fighting this fight, and the show will reward you for it. I'm serious.
Yeah.
I'm serious.
Got it.
The show will reward this measure of thinking, like this line of thinking.
And what about the vampire faces? What did you guys
so
think of those?
So ugly and gross. I did not like them.
If I remember correctly, they get a little bit better. Don't they change a little bit?
It's just kind of hard to watch.
I mean, they give me slight Teen Wolf feelings. Because they're, especially in season one, like, their makeup was strange. And it's not, like, amazing either. So it just, you know, it's kind of weird. And their brow, like, their whole brow bone, like, gets really strange. And yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the brow crinkling is not dissimilar to the Teen Wolf werewolf face, but
their whole face, I mean, they look like monsters, which in some ways is interesting because they are supposed to be monsters, so they don't look like the pretty Edward Cullen, you know, they look scary,
yeah.
But it's just difficult, like, aesthetically, I don't like watching them, because they look just, like, with their teeth and everything, they look pretty gross, and I just don't want to watch them talk, so... I wish that they could maybe, and in some ways, like, when they are beautiful, like in the Vampire Diaries, when they look normal and then all of a sudden they start eating you, that's, like, more terrifying to me. Like, the first
yeah.
scene was the scariest, where she looked normal and then all of a sudden she was, like,
that,
eating you.
That scene is, I love, because that was the entire, like, way that he pitched the show, basically, that you have this very typical horror story, like, blonde girl, you know, gonna get into trouble, gonna get murdered, but then it turns out that she's the killer, if you know what I mean. That opening
mm-hmm.
scene was a very purposeful, like, subversion of the trope, and it was one of the ways that he pitched the show. So, yeah. Were you guys shocked by that?
I was. I thought she was gonna get eaten. So.
Yeah, exactly.
So, see, that's what I mean. I like it better when it's like that instead of them with their weird faces.
Yeah, and I definitely think, I agree that when they look normal and then they start eating you, much scarier. But I think this was also back in a time when, like, it was very stereotypically, like, monster movie kind of stuff. And you especially see that with the Master, who looks different from the other vampires and is kind of vampiric all the time.
Yeah, because he's, like, old as balls and, like...
True.
Sorry.
So were you scared by the Master? Because I kind of find him, like, hilariously endearing.
Wow, Karen.
Well,
what? You find him endearing?
I think I mentioned this during our viewing. Like, they talk very slowly. And it's very, like, what is going on and why do I care? Like, I want to see Buffy killing you. I don't want to hear your life story.
I just think he's funny. I don't know.
I kept thinking he was, like, talking in Bible verses, but apparently he's not. He's just, like, that's just the way he speaks, like, everything.
Yeah. I think that's why I like him, is the way that he talks. Like, he's kind of funny, and, like, just, sorry, thinking about lines he said. I think he's funny, but also he's got that, like, old world kind of speech about him, and I don't know, it lands with me very well. Changing subjects slightly, I would like to point out that Luke, the guy who plays Luke, has been on Charmed, and he's had a role on there, so this is the first of many Charmed references, in case anybody cares.
Oh dear.
Which there are some that do. There are some that do.
Oh my gosh, it was so funny last week listening to your guys' episode, and everybody, like, talking about the only thing they know about Charmed is that she wears halter tops. That's literally the only thing I know about Charmed. They wear
halter tops. The crocheted halter top picture that everyone knows. Everyone knows that picture, even if they don't
know
it's
from Charmed. How representative of that is of I mean, it's very representative of the 90s, but how representative of that is it of Charmed?
Unfortunately, it's kind of fair.
See, like, I feel like I don't want to watch it just because I'm imagining those halter tops. I'm like, I feel like that's going to be the tone of the show, is a very halter top kind of show.
It works in the moment, though.
Yeah.
This is what I said Charmed. To her. I was like, I don't think you could get me on Charmed as a newbie. Like, I really don't think it would happen.
It's because you don't love me enough, Natalie.
Yeah, it's not like I've ever done anything for you before.
Yeah, I've seen some Charmed, so I can kind of see where you're going with that, Karen. Like, I haven't seen the whole series from start to finish, but, you know, it's got a little bit of Buffy-esque-ness to it as well. So it's not, like, entirely crocheted halter tops. And...
This is why Kristen is my roommate, because she loves me more than all of you put together.
Oh! You know that I'd be your roommate if I lived in America. And I'll take you out and have you doing so many fun things, and I would probably let you make me watch Charmed.
Why does fun equate to illegal in my brain? That's what I
When have you ever seen me do anything illegal?
I don't know. That just was kind of scary. Anyway.
You're going to go to the Bronze, aren't you?
Okay. Yeah.
Back on subject, I know we did kind of hit on this already, but because he's so important, let's talk a little bit about Angel's introduction. Because looking back, it's so ridiculous. Like, did you guys take him seriously at all? Because when I first watched this, I was like, oh my god, this guy is like so mysterious and really cute, and he's always in the shadows and he pops up at the right
time. Yeah, like, how did you read this character for the first time in 2015?
Well, for me, it was just, why did he even, like, come out? He didn't help her. He didn't really say anything. All he did was kind of, like, say, I am a guy. Like, I'm here. Like, he didn't really do anything. So I was very confused. I know just from existing that Angel is somewhat important because he gets a spinoff. But I could not place, like, what his role in the series is. Everyone else, it's, you know, very clear what's going on. But Angel, I have no clue.
It's interesting, actually. I really liked the bit in the second episode where Buffy was like, why haven't you done anything? And he goes, because I'm afraid. And he's kind of, like, sassy about it. But I'm like, in retrospect, I'm like, I know you. And, yeah, you are... You've got some growing to do, boy. Like, I kind of forgot how much, like, he has to... He's a lot less headstrong than Buffy, and it's interesting to kind of see that. Like, I'm going to really view him so differently now, and I'm really excited for it, actually. So, I don't know.
Right now I feel like he's the real watcher. Like, he's just watching her.
You're not wrong.
Well, he does like to lurk, you know.
Derek Hale.
Yeah.
God, he is so Derek Hale. Speaking of Buffy, though, newbies, what do you think of Buffy? Because she does sort of break the mold a little bit, being the you know, blonde, small blonde girl walking down the alleyway, and yet, you know, she could totally kick your ass.
Like, I don't know what to think about her. She's awesome. Like, I love that she meets Cordelia, and Cordelia's really, really nice to her and all this stuff. And then Cordelia tells her what she should think, and Buffy's like, okay, I'm done with you. Like, I like that she, from the beginning, is, like, her own person and doesn't really give a crap what everyone else wants her to be. But considering what we know about her now with the whole Slayer thing, you would expect her to be that way because she's got this whole other life to deal with as well. So it's like, yeah, I'm not going to put up with bullshit because I don't need that on top of everything else.
Ariana, how do you feel?
I don't feel anything towards her really right now. I'm like confused. I'm confused. I don't know. This isn't the things people want to hear. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I mean, I think the fact that, like, you're willing to say that you're not sure if you like it, that you don't really get it yet, is a good thing, because this, you're watching it for the first time in 2015. The show's going to be a little rough, let's be real. And a lot of people, I equate it to Star Wars because, you know, bringing it full circle, I don't really care about Star Wars, but clearly there are tons of people that do. I loved the new Star Wars movie for a lot of different reasons that I will not get into because we don't have time for that. But the original and the prequels just don't really do anything for me. And I think that it's okay to feel that way. Hopefully, because you'll be doing this podcast for so long, your opinion will change. But it is a little hard to connect with the story so long after it's already been out into the world.
Yeah, and I mean, I definitely felt that way about doing Star Wars recently. You know, I didn't know what it was going to be like. I didn't know what I was going to, you know, feel about it. And it's something that so many people care about. And I am glad that I liked it, but I think I mainly liked it because I was kind of, you know, trying to view it. I was trying to get as much out of it as I possibly could. And I actually discovered that a lot of the preconceptions about it out in the world are actually not what I ended up seeing on the screen in a good way. But I don't know, like, has anyone ever dropped out of Rewatchable because they hated the show so much?
No, we've had one or two people do it because they didn't have time, but not because they hated it.
Interesting. Ariana, I really hope that you're not the first, and I don't think that you will be.
I don't think I will. I don't think, even if I hated it, I wouldn't drop out, which would probably frustrate a lot of people. I'm not saying I hate it. I don't understand. I just don't think it's great. It's like, it's fine. Like, if I watched it on TV, I'd be like, oh, this is fine. And maybe I would try and keep up, and probably eventually I'd be like, oh, you know, I have a lot of other shows to watch.
Yeah. Well, also, this is like reading the first chapter in a book and deciding how you feel about the entire series of books that are yet to come. You're not going to understand and feel a whole lot right in the beginning. Took me a long time to fall in love with characters of TV shows that we've done on Rewatchable before. And I think talking about it on the podcast really helps to kind of understand how you feel about it. And there's probably listeners out there watching for the first time who are like, you know, guys, I don't know if I'm really feeling Buffy either. So they're going to connect to your opinions as well. And you guys can be in it together. And hopefully you don't have to suffer through the whole thing. Hopefully you do come to the conclusion that you like it. But, you know, everyone's entitled to their own opinions. And if that's yours, I think it's a good thing that you're talking about it.
Yeah. And just to kind of throw this in there, when we were watching Firefly, I didn't love it. Like, there were scenes and bits that I thought were cute, but for the most part, I was really confused as to why everyone loved that series so much. By the end, I totally got it. So I'm hoping that by the end of first season or second season, when we finally are attached to these characters, like, I will have more opinions. But, like, right now, yeah, you're watch the pilot. Like, I've seen some terrible pilots for some really great shows. So, you know, you just have to kind of take it as it goes.
Speaking of Firefly, like, that's the only other real Joss Whedon thing that I've seen, and, like, I loved it. I have high hopes for Buffy, but I loved the pilot for Firefly. Come later, so.
Yeah, Firefly, he started Firefly, you know, when he'd already done about, you know, six seasons of Buffy. Like, that was filming during season 6 and 7 of Buffy. And by the time we get to season 6 and 7 of Buffy, the quality, like, everything about it, like, the cinematography, like, the character depth, it's all, you know, equal to that of Firefly, with even more in the background because you've had 5 seasons of character depth, if you know what I mean. But, yeah, this is, you know, television of a certain era, and, you know, it does, the high school versus, you know, after high school eras, because I, you know, it's not like Teen Wolf where they've been in high school for 75 seasons. They do leave high school. There's 7 seasons. Spoiler alert, they do leave high school at a time in the show.
Is she a sophomore or a junior?
sophomore. You can do the math with that.
This
one.
Is so bizarre because she looks like she's like 30, like all of these teenagers do.
When have you ever seen a high school show where the kids look legitimately like the way that you see the kids on the bus going to high school look like?
That like, one time on Teen Wolf.
It's just...
it's that just, one time.
Like, I want to see a show where kids have, like, faces full of acne and the boys don't know how to shower and, like... This like really ruined my preconceptions of high school. I was like, why doesn't anybody look like?
And most
why are the people at my high school so unattractive?
They kind of project adult issues onto high school kids, like, you know, romances that are taken as seriously as, you know, marriages and stuff like that. You know, kids having sex for the first time. You know, all sorts of things. I'm talking like high school shows in general. You know, like. You know, all sorts of stuff that they project these stories that people of all ages want to watch onto, you know, kids who are 15, 16, 17. But if they actually cast kids that look 15, 16, 17, adults would genuinely feel uncomfortable watching that kind of stuff play out. Like you would get either secondhand embarrassment or feel just uncomfortable about it. Like if you actually saw like really serious, like, romantic or sexual stories between like two kids who actually look 16, you would not feel good about watching it, I pretty much guarantee. So I don't know.
No, I agree. I don't feel good watching it like now. Like now as an adult, like when I go back and watch things, I'm like, oh, like this is really uncomfortable because they're like 16. Ooh.
Yeah, and if they actually looked that young, and I think that's the reason why you always cast older on television, because you can't cast, you know, kids that really look 14, 15, 16, you know, to do the stuff that in the stories that they want to tell. Like high school is just a medium for the storytelling, you know, but if it's not young kids that are watching it, like, you know, you see the kids that actually look like they're in high school, like the kids that actually are like, oh, this is a middle that they get the middle school shows that are on like Nickelodeon or Disney Channel. Like those kids look like high schoolers, whereas shows that are aimed for young adult to adult audiences that are set in high school never look as young as they actually are because people don't feel comfortable watching it, which is super hypocritical. But what are you gonna do?
All right, now, last main question about the actual episodes itself, because I think this is important to point out, because, Ariana, you put in here, are we just supposed to believe that Cordelia does not remember getting kidnapped by vampires?
Yes.
Yes, you are. And I have two thoughts about this. One being the fact that, you know, it's kind of true. People will see something, and then they won't necessarily believe it. They always have excuses ready for not wanting to believe in, you know, like miracles and the supernatural and stuff like that. We've seen it on television and movies a lot. The second thing is, I literally don't think this universe could work if this was not the case, because there are so many vampires and so many things that happen throughout the series that if everybody started believing in vampires, like, it would actually be the apocalypse and the world would end. So you kind of have to suspend your disbelief a little bit.
I'm going to put this in the same category as I'm glad they don't all get knocked out every time they need to forget something. Because these
Is that a thing that happens on some shows?
Yes, on a lot of shows. Like, Vampire Diaries, I can't even tell you how many times Elena knocked her head and was unconscious and missed things. Like, or the same thing happened on Smallville 1,000 times. Or, you know, like, these people would have major head trauma and not be able to just go to school the next day and be okay. So, honestly, I'd rather have Cordelia, like, choose to believe that it was some crazy thing she made up or, you know, just reason it away rather than like start asking a million questions about why this guy had a crazy face and what was going on. Like I can almost justify it in that means, like, I would much rather this be how they handle it.
Okay, see, I can believe, okay, things that seem weird to me, that Xander, after hearing one conversation, is like, oh, I'm ready to jump on board. I believe in vampires now. Whereas, like, Cordelia, who was taken by a vampire, like, no. About to be eaten, does not.
Xander was not. That's the thing.
Yeah.
It got proven to him immediately by the thing actually happening. But no, he didn't believe. He just thought Buffy was nuts. He overhears the thing in the library, and then he confronts her about it and is like, what the hell is... your deal, basically. And he kind of comes up and is like, so, and he's kind of being sarcastic about it. And then she's like, oh my God, does everyone know that I'm the Slayer? And he kind of goes, I know that you think that you're the Slayer, if you know what I mean. Like, he knows that she has this quote unquote crazy delusion, but it then very, very swiftly gets proven to him that it's true. He didn't believe it initially. He just thought Buffy was crazy and that Buffy and Giles were in a crazy cult or something, if you know what I mean.
Okay. But still going on to the Cordelia thing, I mean, it made sense to me that everyone else, and like, you can talk it up, like in Hocus Pocus, they're like, oh, it's a show, you know, just kidding, it's just like a show or whatever. But that nobody suspects that something weird just seems really bizarre to me, that not one person, like, I kind of expected, I thought at the end Cordelia would be like, what's going on? And maybe like go on her own and try and investigate. But
I don't think that really falls into line with Cordelia's personality, though. At this point, with what you've seen so far, Cordelia is like, she would rather blame it on, you know, people doing drugs than really imagine, like, she doesn't want to be the crazy one, be like, guys, I totally saw vampires. She would never say that in front of her friends.
Yeah, that's true.
So just give us some time. I think things will play out pretty well with some characters and how they develop regarding this. I think in other ways you do kind of have to suspend your disbelief a little bit, but it'll be worth it. I promise.
I have a quick question that I forgot to bring up when we were talking about vampires earlier. So it seems to me like it's pretty easy. So vampires, you just like, you stab them and they turn into dust, right? So they're dead. Does that mean they're dead?
Yes.
Okay. That seems like very easy to me. Like, why do... Well, this is probably questions you can't answer, but I'm like, why do you need a Slayer? I feel like anybody could do that.
Do you know how much force it takes to drive a blunt bit of wood into a human, like, chest? Like, Buffy has super strength. She's not just, like, forced to do it. Like, she has more physical ability in her body than a normal person.
Okay, but, like, Willow killed somebody by, like, throwing some holy water on them. She was like, whoop! And they're like, ah!
Well, she didn't die, but
And then Xander, he was just like, here's a cross! And they were like, ah, back away!
I don't know. I can't help you with these questions, I don't think.
Maybe, okay, here's me playing a little bit of devil's advocate. Without the Slayer, they wouldn't have known to do that. Like, they wouldn't have known that the snake or the holy water. Right. Yeah. I mean, there's general vampire lore, but they wouldn't have known they were vampires. That's not what I would have assumed a vampire looked like. So, you know, like, maybe that's why you need the Slayer, is so that you know what to use to protect yourself.
Yeah.
Well, they're trying to keep, you know, everything's a secret. Like, it's not like everyone knows about it in general. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think, you see, this is so hard. I keep saying this. I feel like a broken record. But going forward, as you watch, you will learn more about why she's necessary. Because these are the first two episodes, because it's technically the pilot, like a 2-hour pilot, it doesn't explain all of these things right away. So I think a lot of your questions and concerns are going to be answered.
And then you said, like, everybody says it needs to be a secret. I feel like if it wasn't a secret, it would be better. Then she could just tell everybody to wear a giant cross like she does. And then the vampires wouldn't eat them.
Then you wouldn't have a show.
That's why I said abuelitas are secure. They're fine. They got the giant cross on them. They're good.
Okay, yes, that is true. Okay, last question. Natalie, this one's for you. Do you feel like there was anything particularly groundbreaking with these first two episodes?
I'm not sure. Like, do you mean for the time or, like, just as a show? Like, I don't know. I can't remember, Karen. I can't remember what it was like back then. Like,
for me, the biggest thing is just the fact that, like, Buffy's our hero, that, you know, she looks so vulnerable and unsuspecting, and yet she is this major BAMF, and that's always been a huge draw for me. And I think more shows need to play into those types of, I guess, like, breaking those stereotypes, because it's so fascinating.
Yeah.
All right. Shall we get into favorite scenes and favorite lines?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Sure.
Okay. So for the first episode, favorite scenes. Natalie, you're up first.
Mine was actually, surprisingly to me, the scene where she first meets Angel, because it kind of, without building up to it, it reveals a lot about how unbelievably, like, skilled Buffy is. Like, kind of, you know, he's walking underneath. You don't, you know, and you see the shot of her holding herself up on the beam, like, number one display of, like, how physically powerful she is. And then when she drops down and kind of attacks him and she's like, why were you following me and stuff? Like, she knows, like, everything that's going on. Like, she doesn't exactly play dumb at school, but just because she kind of has this bubbly personality that's, like, flippant and stuff like that doesn't mean that she doesn't have these incredibly strong, like, base instincts, which is also kind of displayed in the second episode where she kind of realizes that Luke, like, came from behind her to grab her in the tunnel. Like, she's got this really... not military, but, like, she's got this very, very, very strong skill set that I really liked kind of getting displayed without it being over the top. It's just, like, as much a part of her as the one-liners are. So I loved that, and I loved the fact that Angel was just ridiculous. And so, yeah, that initial meeting is not something I've ever cared about before, but very much was this time.
That was actually my favorite scene, too. And, I mean, I'll pick another one, but just really quick. Like, when she's balancing on that bar like that, it's just iconic Buffy to me. That is usually, like, the first image I think of, because I think it's so amazing that, you know, anyone watching from the outside would be like, oh, no, she's being followed down an alley. You know, we should worry for her. And then she just takes Angel out, and he's just like, wow, where did you come from? And it was really great. But the one that I ended up picking was Buffy wanting to hang out with Willow and Xander despite being warned by Cordelia. I thought that, like you were saying before, Ariana, the way that she's just like, Cordelia's trying to tell her what to think and who to stay away from. And Buffy's like, yeah, no, I'm going to, you know, make my own choices. And she really wants to pass in school and do well. And she knows Willow will help her. And it doesn't feel like she's taking advantage of that or pressuring her into helping her. She genuinely is like, hey, I need the help. You're smarter than me. Will you please help me so I don't fail? And that's always really nice.
Just the stuff with Willow as well was really sweet to me, like the scene later in the club as well. Like, first of all, it's kind of like, are you just like hanging out with this nerd girl because, you know, you can think you can get something out of her? But, you know, it is very clear that she kind of, Cordelia is like genuinely nice to Buffy. It isn't superficial. Like, it's even less superficial than, you know what, you know how I'm always like, why did Lydia and Allison become friends in Teen Wolf? That Cordelia and Buffy's meeting is less superficial than Lydia and Allison's. It's like genuinely like Cordelia is the kind of girl that Buffy would want to hang out with. She's, you know, lively, cares about fashion and all that kind of stuff. But she also, you know, treats people badly, which Buffy ends up, you know, discovering and not approving of. But Cordelia and Buffy's meeting is like, you know, they genuinely do seem to like each other. And she's like, you know, you can tell me everything about you and stuff like that. Like, she seems to quite be into the friendship until obviously they change that pretty rapidly. But yeah, Buffy's kind of care about Willow, like when they go to the club and Willow's like, you don't have to come back, and Buffy's like, I'll be right back. Like, she's like, you know, you know, you don't have to be like that, is really sweet to me. So I really enjoyed seeing that again, actually.
Yeah. Ariana, did you have anything you wanted to say?
I liked the beginning. The beginning scene when we had the, that we talked about earlier, when the girl was like, oh, and you thought that she was going to get in, but no, she ate the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is a good one. And then Kristen?
Mine might be a little bit random, but I love the scene with Buffy and the, like, the principal where he starts talking and he's like, you know, you don't have to worry about any of that in this school. Like, you know, he kind of, like, welcomes her, and you don't expect him to act like that.
And then he actually catches the and then he catches a glimpse of the transcript and is like,
right, like he rips the transcript up and then he tapes it back together. And I was like, what the heck? Like, I was kind of taken aback, but it cracked me up. And I really just thought that scene was a little bit, it was a little bit different than you usually see in this kind of thing. So it stuck out and I remembered it. So that's why it was my favorite.
And moving on to favorite lines for the first episode, Natalie, yours kind of ties into what we were saying earlier about Willow and Buffy.
It was just the kind of the phrasing of it. But like, you know, when Buffy comes to kind of sit with Willow and saying, you know, oh, yeah, it does involve hanging out with me for a little while. Willow says, but aren't you hanging out with Cordelia? Buffy says, I can't do both. And Willow goes, not legally, because, yeah, I love the quips. I love the vocabulary that everyone kind of has and the way that people choose their phrasing in this show. Like, I really do.
Yeah. Okay, so I have to admit that I kind of teared up during this episode rewatching it. It surprised me how hard this one scene really hit me. I was not expecting it. It's between Giles and Buffy, and Giles is explaining, and he goes, a slayer slays, a watcher, and Buffy goes, watches? Giles is like, yes, no. He trains her, he prepares her, and then Buffy says, prepares me for what? For getting kicked out of school? For losing all of my friends? For having to spend all of my time fighting for my life and never getting to tell anyone because I might endanger them? Go ahead, prepare me. And this is a theme, especially in season one, but I would say throughout all of Buffy. And, you know, she tries so hard to be normal, but she's not normal. And that's, I think, a little stereotypical of a lot of heroes, especially like superheroes, people with enhanced abilities. But that scene, I was just thinking about some other parts in season one, and I started to tear up, and I was like, oh God, this is going to be a rough, like, rewatchable. I was not expecting this in the first episode.
Oh, Karen.
But Ariana, yours is funny.
Mine was when she, when she's talking to Willow, and she's telling her, you know, seize the moment, because tomorrow you might be dead. And Willow goes, oh, that's nice. Like,
and Kristen, yours is funny too.
Yeah, mine comes from Xander. It's when they were in the hallway and he like runs into Buffy and he's all stammery and weird. And he, after she walks away, he says, we both go to school. Very suave, very not pathetic. And then he like sees that she dropped something and he picks it up and says, oh, hey, you forgot your steak. And it just, it's so great. I love, like, she has a steak in her bag and it fell out. And so now what is this crazy kid going to think about her carrying around a wooden steak? Like, I quite love Xander already. And I'm, yeah, it's going to be fun.
And it's particularly interesting because Buffy, clearly when she goes to see Giles for the first time, is so not there for vampires, but she did not forget to pack her steak. Like, she's not stupid. She knows that they're still going to crop up, but as much as she tries to run away from it, I think it's already ingrained in her. Mm. All right, favorite scenes, episode 2, Natalie.
My favorite that I chose for this one was actually the end conversation, like after they all, you know, kind of stop the harvest and they've got their new little gang, like, you know, where they're basically just making Giles's life hell. Like, a lot of my favorite parts of this show is Giles being overwhelmed by teenagers. So that was good for me. I enjoyed that, basically, where they're all kind of like flippant and then they're like, oh, next time, and like they're kind of, because they're like kids, it's like, oh my god, are we really doing this, if you know what I mean? And I just really enjoyed that. So yeah,
Giles being overwhelmed by teenagers is like it's my favorite description of what happens to him throughout this whole series. That's really accurate. My favorite scene was when Buffy tricks Luke with the sunlight. I don't know why, but it makes me laugh every time because he's like, oh, I'm dying. And then he's like, wait, I'm not dying. And she just kills him. And she's like, you're an idiot. It was so funny.
That was funny because I thought, like, when she said that, she's like, you forgot the sunlight. And I was like, wait, like, have, like, all this time
has
passed? I thought it was, like, 10 o'clock at night. Yeah.
No, it was, yeah, it was good.
Ariana, do you have a favorite scene?
No. No. Does somebody else have one? I like the sunlight scene. Can I take that one too?
Sure. We can share. Kristen, do you want to go ahead?
Yeah. Mine was definitely the scene where they were all kind of in the library and Willow, like, sits down at the computer and helps Giles, like, she finds things on the internet and all of that fun. If there's one thing I love, it's the tech girl. When I watch Smallville, Chloe is my favorite. I watch Arrow, Felicity is my hero. Like, I have an affinity for the tech genius sidekick. And so the fact that Willow is already that girl, like, she's the one who can help out and that's her niche. I loved her finding that niche and, like, knowing her kind of place in this crew. Like, Xander's still trying to figure out how he's going to help, but we all know Giles's role. And so seeing Willow kind of start to form hers was really fun.
And heading into favorite lines for episode 2, Natalie?
Mine was the kind of, again, Giles being overwhelmed by teenagers at the beginning with their opening conversation after they've just discovered everything in episode 1, where he kind of is telling the kids, you know, for as long as there's been vampires, there's been the Slayer. One girl in all the world, a chosen one. And Buffy's like, he loves doing this part. And he's just like, all right, the Slayer hunts vampires. Buffy's a Slayer. Don't tell anyone. And I just love it. I just think it's hilarious. Like, oh, Giles. Yeah. Anyway.
It's so good. I love my favorite line has to do with Xander being naive about this whole world, and, like, even there are parts where Willow does this too, and Buffy just kind of goes, you know, I tried looking for the vampires, but vroom, and then he goes, they can fly, and she goes, they can drive, and it's just like, because you don't know, walking into this world, you don't know what the rules are, and it's like, no, they can drive, because they're just kind of like regular people.
Do they have super speed?
When driving?
No, just the,
like, I guess you will find out the further you watch. Ariana, what's your favorite line?
Mine was when Giles was talking to Xander, because this was a really interesting way, and I never thought of this before. Like, you know, when TV shows and movies and books, you know, your friend always gets turned into something terrible, and you're trying to save them, but sometimes you can't, but it's hard to, like, give that up. And so he said, listen to me, Jesse is dead. You have to remember that when you're looking at him, you're not looking at your friend. You're looking at the thing that killed him. And I was like, ooh, that's so deep.
Yeah.
Thanks, Giles.
Were you surprised with what happened with Jesse?
I don't know.
Because I always kind of was. I felt like he was set up to be a main character.
It's done on purpose.
Right.
Well, I knew he wasn't a main character because he wasn't, like, on the covers of anything. But I think that I thought that maybe he would, I don't know.
I always thought he would
get phased
longer
away after the pilot.
Yeah. Like, I always thought he had a longer arc. And I always thought that he, like, because he was set up as being part of the gang, like, he's Xander's best friend. So it just, it always kind of shocks me, I guess, that, you know, what happens to him happens to him. Kristen, what did you feel about that?
Well, you know, we may or may not have watched the first couple of episodes of a show that's not on the air yet. And I may have gotten kind of attached to a character.
I didn't know what you were talking about.
Show that's not on the air yet. I'm trying to think which
the
one.
The Shannara.
Yeah.
Shannara.
Yeah. I thought it was Shannara, but
one of the perks of working for Hypable is that occasionally you get to see an episode or two of something that comes out a little early, and we got to watch a couple of episodes of the Shannara Chronicles, and there's a character in there that I got very attached to, and I probably shouldn't have. And so I'm really glad that I didn't get attached to Jesse because, yeah. But I know the very first time I saw this, I was a little... I was, because this isn't the first time I've seen the pilot. I've seen it once before. And I know the first time I was a little shocked that he was gone in, like, the pilot or, like, in the second episode. So it definitely was something because he seemed like he was going to be around based on how often he had shown up. So, you know, I wasn't shocked by it, but also wasn't, like, sad to see him go because he was kind of weird.
Fair. Okay, what's your favorite line?
My favorite line takes place in my favorite scene because, duh. Giles says, so all the city plans are just open to the public? And then Willow says, well, in a way, I sort of stumbled onto them when I accidentally decrypted the city council security system. And then Xander says, someone's been naughty. And it's just great. Like, I love that she's genius and can just decrypt the social... the city council security system and get them what they need. It's awesome.
Yeah. Okay, so that wraps up our recap and discussion of the first two episodes of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. As usual, if you would like to get in contact with us, rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com for our email. Twitter is re_watchable. You can comment on this post on hypeable.com or any of our other Buffy-centric posts. And you can find us on Twitter at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And somebody is writing this as I'm saying it right now, so I have not read this before, but if you rate us 5 stars on iTunes, then steaks will be given to you. Yay!
So Karen and I are going to start whittling? Is that
what? Yes. I mean, we have quite a few trees in our backyard, so this can be a thing that
will
happen.
We'll start collecting sticks. Yeah.
Yes! Okay, I'm actually, like, genuinely, like, can we do this? Because that would be really fun.
And I now have a new hobby.
Okay, listener feedback. On Hypeable, we have this from Michaela, who says, I'm a super fan. I started watching Buffy my freshman year of high school, season 5, and it is my favorite TV show of all time. Selena, I was just like you. I had my own stake. I also still have a few t-shirts, a good amount of the books and comics, the board game and video game, and a few autographs from the cast. I've never listened to Rewatchable, although I want to go back and listen to the Avatar and Korra episodes, and I am so excited to start with Buffy. Thank you, Michaela. Please go back and listen to them. I hope you enjoy them. They're a lot of fun, and it'll give you more time to get to know some of the hosts a little bit better, because we get a little ridiculous, and we've been podcasting together for a while, so I think it'll be nice to listen to us then and then come join us now, having gotten to know us a little bit. Next one on Hypeable is from Jolene, who just says, Xander is the worst. Do you feel this way, Natalie? How do you feel about Xander?
I get why we all found him endearing in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we've all learnt better now about what makes a guy decent, and this isn't necessarily it.
Honestly, that's what I'm worried about, because I really like Xander, but I'm really worried my opinion of him is going to change drastically, and I'm not sure I'm ready for that to happen.
And I feel like that about Spike. Like, I feel like that about many characters in this show. But
Xander does have a mushroom shirt, so we all have to keep that
God.
In mind.
Yes. I was so excited. I never noticed his mushroom shirt before, now I want it.
So, yeah. You know, there's always that.
Yeah. Okay, Twitter. I'll have somebody else read some of these. Nat, why don't you take this first one?
So first tweet was from Raven, who is lots_of_awesome on Twitter, saying, starting my BTBS rewatch, I was beyond obsessed with the show back in the day. Can't wait to hear your discussion of episode 1. And so hopefully you've enjoyed this. Here it is. If you guys have any further questions of what we liked or didn't like about that episode, like, you know, feel free to come and tweet more and stuff. But yeah. Here we are. We've done episode 1 and 2.
Ariana, you want to get Stephanie's?
Stephanie Merrill at Steffi Merrill said, at Rewatchable, hearing the Buffy theme in the intro got me all teary-eyed. Hashtag no shame. Hashtag ouch right in my chest.
Oh, here you go, Ariana. Here's another Star Wars tie-in for you. The Buffy theme, the very famous, like, new, that kind of really driving, like, 90s rock. Like, the band who wrote that, like, this is what they're most famous for, though they have many other albums, are called Nerf Herder.
Oh, how funny. You know, yeah. What's really, this just reminded me, this should have been my fun fact. When I was in college, we did a, when I was a freshman, so 6 years ago, we did a, like, a YouTube show, and we used the Buffy intro as our, like, intro music. So, even though I'd never seen it, somebody else had. So, you can search the ethers of the internet for that if you wish to see me at 18.
I might do that. That would be fantastic. Kristen, why don't you take Jules?
Sure. Jules Gamache at Jewel, Gamache, says, so excited for my first season of Rewatchable to be rewatching Buffy. Welcome. We love having people.
Yay. Especially new. I'm so excited for the new people.
I know.
Yeah, it's really great. And hopefully they like us enough to go back because we have quite a bit of back catalog at this point.
Yeah, that person followed me on Twitter the other day. I saw it. Hello. Oh. You said you like my Star Wars article. Thank you for reading it. It's 5,000 words long. So thank you to anyone that read that beast of ridiculous.
She's not exaggerating. It's actually 5,000 words.
It's literally 5,000 words long. Yeah.
It was good. I said it was good.
Yes.
Okay, and our next tweet comes from Mitch, who could not be on. It wasn't his turn to be on, but he managed to sneak his way in anyway, who says, quote, you should have been there. It was so creepy. And then in all caps, your peers were brutally murdered, Cordelia, and this is how you react? So hopefully Mitch listens back and can understand, perhaps, the reasoning behind this and what we said about this particular scene. But
I'll let you guys know. You guys know Marima, and you know what her tastes are and things like that. Cordelia is Marima's favorite character on Buffy, just so you guys know. So that may tell you something, that may inform you something about the character. Yeah.
Karen mentioned that during our watch, and I went, okay. All right. Yeah. I'm understanding things.
And then lastly, from Gordon, Natalie.
Yeah, this is a non-Buffy related rewatchable piece of feedback that I got in a conversation with Gordon this morning about Star Wars. Toonie Chopper Man, our loyal Gordon, says, by the way, still haven't seen Hamilton, but all I could think about in Maz Kantana's was Lin-Manuel Miranda. Rewatchable just invaded the scene entirely because, if you guys don't know, in the new Star Wars, Lin worked with J.J. Abrams to write the new quote-unquote cantina music, like the traditional, like, we're in a bar and there's a band playing bit in Star Wars. And so there was a little bit of kind of, it had a very low-key little tune in that scene. That was Lin and JJ singing, and Lin composed the music. And so there you go. If you watch the credits of the new Star Wars, you'll see his name, because, and we had to mention that because we are, you know, at heart, a Hamilton podcast. So,
yes.
Yeah. Cool.
This is true. Okay, well, that's it for our first recap episode of Buffy. Hope you guys enjoyed it, and hopefully you will come back next week when we discuss episodes 3 and 4. But until then, I'm Karen.
I'm Natalie.
I'm Ariana.
And I'm Kristen.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm sorry, I was on mute.
It happens.
I'm sorry.
Kristen, fix your headphones before.
Got it.
Oh my god, you sound like a droid.
I know. okay.
Better?
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
But I kind of liked the old way better. But...